Welcome to Taking Notes, the Lotus Notes and Domino podcast. Here are your hosts, Bruce Elgort and Julian Robichaud.
Hello and welcome to the Taking Notes podcast. This is episode 23 on Wednesday, June 7th, and tonight Bruce and I talk to smart guy Damian Katz.
Super smart guy.
And he talked to us about CouchDB, the project he's been just heads down with for the last year and a half, and tells us what CouchDB is, what it can do, how it works, and all sorts of
geek
internals.
Geek alert.
It's somewhat geeky in parts, but at the same time, it's also very interesting to kind of see sort of where he's going
geek
with
alert,
it. And
geek alert.
Oh, come on, it's great.
No,
good
it is
listening.
Good. It's very good.
Very good. Hey, take a listen. Here comes the podcast. All right, we're all here. Damian, Bruce. Bruce, I know you're fine. Damian, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Good, good. All right, now let's talk about Couch. I think we can, you know, we can safely skip the whole IBM background and all the cool stuff that Damian did at IBM and Lotus and Iris and stuff, because everyone knows that, and if not, we'll just give you some nice links on the podcast show notes. Damian, Couch. Okay, to start out with Couch. Okay, now I'm sure there's a lot of venture capitalists that are listening to this that are just dying to start pouring money into your pockets. So, do you have like a 20-second VC pitch yet?
No, I don't have anything. I still don't know how I'm going to make any money or build a business with this. It's definitely something that is on my mind lately, but I really don't know.
All right. Well, all money aside, how would you do the quick explanation of what the heck is Couch to someone who just has no idea?
Well, I'll just tell you what CouchDB is, which is the back end portion, because I actually have a very grand vision of Couch, but it's a bit
large.
Well, it's just not working on for about the past year and a half is CouchDB, which is the database portion of Couch, and it's basically a document database that is very similar to the NSF store that exists in Notes, and it's got a reporting engine that's similar to the Vue engine in Notes, and it's got a query language that's similar to Formula language. So that's basically what CouchDB is. It's supposed to be a replicatable document store. Eventually, I also see it as being a partitionable document store, which means a single database, portions of it can reside on different machines or different nodes for scalability purposes and reliability purposes.
I know a company in Redmond who is looking for something like that for their mail system.
Oh,
they haven't been able to do it yet.
You know, I read about how Microsoft Exchange is architected, and it's a disaster. I can't believe they haven't come up with anything better. It's so outdated. It's completely I guess just the word is outdated. The world has moved on. The people need distributed, reliable technologies, and they're I don't know what sort of mode that they're thinking in, but.
You mean something more than a jet database?
Yeah, I mean, what's their total limit? Total store limit right now?
I don't know. Bruce, you're an Exchange guy.
Yeah, it's a lot bigger than you think it is. It's not as small as it used to be, but we don't allow our message stores to get that big. But we won't talk about it during this podcast because we're talking about CouchDB. So.
All right,
well,
bad tangent.
It's actually very relevant, you know, the architecture they've taken, and my understanding of, you know, how these databases need to be built, in particularly for a distributed manner. I really think that the Microsoft stuff is just terrible. But viva la Notes, and I am a big believer in the Notes way of doing things, and that's what CouchDB is all about, is trying to extend that.
Mr. Gates, tear down this wall.
All right. Well, and you talked about the whole, you know, document store concept. Now I know you wrote something the other day about document-oriented development. Is that still something you're kind of tossing around and working the definition out in your head?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's definitely I would say the most business applications are document-oriented applications until you start getting into ERP and those sorts of systems. But, contacts, customer records, customer calls, all these things can be considered documents. If these things weren't computerized, they'd be written down on a sheet of paper and shipped around and filed away and photocopied and all that sort of stuff. As opposed to, say, accounting sorts of applications where you have ledgers, even though the ledger itself is a document, it's not something that gets passed around and shared and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially, very much what this sort of development is geared towards, is this idea of a discrete, piece of information that comes into the system and has to be handled, has to be shared, has to be edited, accounted for, or whatever. And that's one of the things that Notes is great about, just storing a bunch of documents and organizing them any way that you see fit. And that's a big part of what I see as being this document-oriented development that I don't think relational databases handle very well. I think they're very schema-oriented, and you have to carefully think about all your data ahead of time before you put it in, and then you have to know exactly all the format that it's in order to query on it. And I don't think it's a very workable solution for many applications.
Yeah, well, and I think that's...
I'm sorry. That's basically my concept of document-oriented development is that for so long the front end has been addressed. We have all sorts of viewers and UIs and editors and stuff, but the actual storage mechanism and the way that we organize it and report on it, I think it's been very neglected. Everybody keeps trying to use relational databases, which I think is a mistake.
Yeah, and I think that ends up being one of the weaknesses in relational databases is that you have to, like you're saying, you have to plan the schema ahead of time, and you have to just get into all those details, and heaven forbid you go outside of the schema, because if you need to, if you had first name, last name, address, and all of a sudden you need to put a middle name field in there, well, gosh, now I got to go redo the schema. You can't just stick something on a document.
Right, exactly.
And then I was looking through your wiki too, which by the way, the wiki is very readable. So, kind of congratulations on that for taking, I guess, some of the technical things and just kind of boiling them down. I thought that was some good explanations. And one of the things on there, it looked like, as you were describing the documents, it looked like it was essentially everything on a document was a field, where it looked like maybe you had, the whole body of the document was just one big body field. You might have some tags on it that describe the document or categorize it or something. Those are just kind of fields. Is that a fairly good high-level understanding?
That's pretty much how the Notes documents the Couch documents are. It's very similar to Notes with the items. Unlike Notes, there's no limit on the size of the summary items. In Notes, you're limited to 32K total for the summary. CouchDB is basically going to be unlimited, but if you make it extremely large, then it slows down the indexing a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, what was your question again?
Oh, it just about how it looked like everything on a document was a field.
Right. Right. So that's basically everything is a field. Eventually, I'm also going to add the ability for attachments, and I don't know how I'm going to do non-summary fields. If I'm going to have those be uniformly just everything is an attachment, or have some non-summary items, or attachments, or summary items, and then attachments where you have like your rich text body that's just stored in an attachment. I'm sorry, that's probably way too technical.
No, that's perfect. Not you, but kind of people who are listening or someone who wants to use this to try to think, okay, how does this fit into my model of the world?
Right.
And in fact, I guess kind of we mentioned that one of the kind of weaknesses of relational databases and schemas and things, one of the strengths of relational databases and schemas is the indexing. And how, if everything does fit into this very tightly controlled model of the world, or model of data, then you can really build some a lot of indexing and optimization into the data. Now, what kind of challenges do you have with Couch, since it's all fairly free-flowing? How do you end up handling the indexes in that case?
Well, that's the computed table facility, which is basically highly analogous to the view engine in Notes. But these computed tables are meant to be able to query, be queried in a similar fashion to SQL. I haven't actually decided if I'm going to allow the database to be queried with SQL queries or not. But anyway, these computed tables will be indexed, and you'll be able to do lookups into them off of a key and get the values back and plug in the results of the lookups in one table into another to build much more complex queries. Unlike the view engine, this is the table engine. This is the back end. So you actually have access to multiple view indexes at once, or multiple table indexes at once, in order to build a more complex representation of the view. And it's kind of hard to explain exactly what I mean, but you know how frequently you want to, in a view column formula, want to do a lookup into another view in order to get some sort of relational capabilities. Well, you won't be able to do that either in CouchDB, but you will be able to do relational style queries on all the tables and then present those results to the user.
So like a join kind of query?
Right. You could do, exactly. Like you would do joins in SQL to you know, join the data of the different tables to assemble objects. In the same way, you would be able to do that in CouchDB with the different the tables. But the difference is that in CouchDB, the tables are computed based off the contents of the database, whereas in a relational database, you have to insert the exact piece of data into each table set.
Mm-hmm. So Damien, a typical Notes Domino geek, you know, looking at CouchDB, what kinds of things in CouchDB would they look at and say, "Oh wow, I know how to do this already," and you know, how easy is it to develop stuff in CouchDB?
Well, the storage model is very similar to Notes. The computed table model is similar to Notes as well. So if a user, you know, understands the concept of documents and views and how to create the view formulas, they would instantly understand Couch database development and, mm-hmm. and exactly how to go about accomplishing what they want to do. Mm-hmm. So it's for the Notes guys, it's going to be simple. For the rest of everybody out there who's used to relational databases, I don't know how they're going to react to it.
Mm-hmm. So what's so compelling about CouchDB that would make, you know, Notes people, you know, Notes types say, "Wow, I'm going to dig into CouchDB and, you know, start developing solutions for it."
Well, just a lot of the old limitations in Notes that exist just because they've always been there, and they can't, you know, it would require them to rewrite the system from scratch to remove a lot of these.
Can you give an example?
Well, for instance, the limitations of note size of the summary items in a note.
Right.
Is just a huge deal because so much of storage, the view engine, replication, all those things rely on how the notes are stored onto disk and everything. Mm-hmm. So Notes has this legacy. It's got, you know, there's no way out of the box I'm going to be able to do all the things that Notes does, but right. I'll be able to clean up a lot of the mistakes that Notes just can't. Mm-hmm. And it's not that, you know, the engineers there aren't necessarily aware of them or anything like that. It's just that you know, they got bigger fish to fry.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also don't have that whole backwards compatibility issue to deal with.
Right,
either.
Right. That's right. It's the old joke. How did God create the world in 7 days? He had no installed base.
Right.
So, you know, that's so it gives me a lot of flexibility. You know, I can do a lot of things that just this can't be done in the Notes world. Mm-hmm.
So, where are you at with with the overall CouchDB project? I mean,
well, it's so basically the core database engine is done with the reporting features and all the concurrency and the robustness. So just to give you an example of where it's at, I mean, it's not just now working. I mean, I've had a great deal of the code working. I've had a great deal of the code working for months now, but I've now finally got it all working together. Well, everything that was going to be difficult working together is now all working. So the database is the server is crash only, which means that when you shut down, it doesn't go down through a shutdown phase. It just basically pulls the plug. Anything that it was in the middle of doing, it just stops doing.
Mm-hmm.
And what this means is that on startup, you get a consistent startup. You don't go through these consistency checks and fix-ups because you had an abnormal shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
What happens on servers is that becomes a reliability issue because if a server crashes and you have large databases open, it can take a very long time for those to be consistency checked. So the server goes down for even a second, that means it's going to be down for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so CouchDB avoids those sorts of things with its design. It should be competitive with Notes in terms of performance. For these types of applications, it should be a great deal faster than relational databases. But you know, that's only for document-oriented applications where you don't have a schema.
Yeah, in Notes and Domino, we used Domino Designer to develop Notes and Domino applications. I mean, have you given any, I'm sure you have, any thought to how the developer ID is going to come together and as well as security and some other mechanisms?
That is, I don't know. I'm trying to get the back end all into place, and then that's when I start working on the ID, that's when I want to start getting people involved to help with it.
Hence this podcast.
I've got some ideas about the designer, but nothing's real firm, I have a feeling that there's going to be more than one designer client, because initially what I want to build is something that's very much geared towards end users, people who only have enough programming experience to make some spreadsheets, but that's about it. You know, mm-hmm. they're familiar with Word and Office and Excel. So I want to create a very simple stripped down UI that lets these people create some forms and some views and just some simple application stuff.
Mm-hmm. You know what just popped in my head when you were talking about that? You know, I thought about the Google spreadsheet thing and mm-hmm. how cool it would be, if you could just go to this, website or service. Put together some views, put together some forms, some workflows, some connectors into some external data sources, and poof, have this magical, online database ready to use,
Yeah, absolutely. That's a big part of exactly what I want to see. And with the fact that this is also meant to be a replicatable database, means that you'll be able to take these applications offline with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the ace in the whole feature for CouchDB. And it's been the go-to feature for Notes. There's still very few applications out there that can approach its ability to work offline. And And I everybody keeps saying that, we got wireless, more and more places have the net, eventually you're just always going to be online, it's not going to be an issue. But I just don't see that happening. You know, as soon as you get somewhere where you are offline, you know, all that theory about that, you know, everything is going to be connected, it all goes out the window as soon as you can't connect. And lots of businesses have this problem with their salesmen. People go on site, they go wherever, and they just can't connect, but they still have to get to the information. They still have to get to the shared data.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
So that's where I'm hoping that, you know, that's the ace in the hole. That's the one thing that this does that no other web development platform does.
Well, so, and it sounds like the other side of that whole replication piece is obviously on the server side. You can start clustering servers or have, you know, really servers that are very far away from each other that are replicating with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And I plan to make the replication be XML and HTTP based. So, actually, I need to look into Ray Ozzie's specifications for replication because it also has an XML replication spec. But you would be able to create public websites that replicate data and share applications so that you could have a discussion that's actually the same discussion happening on several different websites. Things like that, you know, applications that we don't really aren't able to do nowadays with, you know, bidirectionally sharing data.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and you know, things like a wiki where, you know, maybe you just want to host a portion of a wiki on your site. You know, things like that will be possible. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of stuff that I see, lots of directions I see all this going. I kind of want to go in all of them all at once, but I have to pick a direction.
But like you said, you pretty much the engineering work on the engine, right? Is
yeah, the back end piece. You know. Most people, when they approach building a groupware app, they focus on the front end, and then, you know, they always just use whatever is available for the back end storage. And I'm really taking the approach that the back end storage and the unique properties of it is very important. It should be as important as the rest of your application suite.
I'm sure Notes evolved the same way, right? I'm sure Ray and the gang were not sitting there designing the end user UI first. You know, maybe
right. You know, well. You know, it's hard to know. I know that they had a lot of visions about how they wanted this stuff to work, and with the replication. I've heard lots of stories, and I never know what's actually right. I've heard the story that they originally weren't planning to make it replicate offline, but you know, it was just like, well, we've got all this other stuff in place. Let's just go ahead and make it so that, you know, that the clients can take the databases offline and everything. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know exactly what they were thinking. And I have a feeling that what Ray's original vision was isn't quite what Notes ended up being. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, you always adjust what you're trying to build as you go along with it to adapt to, you know, new knowledge and circumstances.
I say we get Ray on a podcast, Julian.
Hey, what the heck? I'm sure he's listening right now.
Yeah, hey, Ray.
No problem. Yeah,
I got his email.
All right. Well, maybe we'll talk offline. And so, what else, Julian? More questions for Damien on CouchDB? I mean, there's tons.
What?
I mean, you go to Damien's site and you can read, you know, just tons of information about the formula language that he's developed and how he's developed it and all this other kind of stuff.
Well, if I can get a little bit geeky for a second, in terms of the whole engine and the programming of it, you end up using Erlang for that. What was the logic behind using Erlang instead of anything else?
Well, it's about the concurrency and being productive as a programmer. When I started building CouchDB, I started building it in C++, and the same stuff that had been bugging me about C++ just kept bugging me as I was developing it, and I kept having all these questions. Well, what am I going to do when this happens? What am I going to do when that happens? And it's a lot of work in the code, and it's very hard to get right, and it's unlikely you're going to get it all correct. So, you know, I investigated a lot of different languages, and you know, I found kept popping up Erlang. This, it was used by telecoms. It had a high degree of robustness and reliability and concurrency. And what really sold me on it was reading about that there was a switch product, I think, developed by Ericsson that had 1.7 million lines of airline code in it. And it was actually had a reliability or a downtime of 38 milliseconds a year.
Wow.
And it was something like 6 or 7 nines of reliability. And this is software.
How do you have 37 milliseconds of downtime?
Well, I think that's when they swap out the code, and it has to go down briefly for upgrades.
Wow.
So
it could have just happened.
Yeah. So that was what really got me interested in it, and I'm glad that I have. It's totally changed my perspective on how to write reliable software and all those little nagging questions and things that I was never quite comfortable about C++ with. I have a much better understanding of why now that I've actually seen what the answer is.
Mm-hmm. Now, is Erlang going to allow you to do some cross-platform kind of development too?
Oh, yeah, it's built for Linux and Solaris and, of course, Windows. I don't know if they have a Mac client, but since they have a Linux runtime for it, then I would assume that a Mac one is probably available. But, yeah, it is definitely cross-platform. I also have some native portions, like the Fabric engine is written in C++, so it's limited to where I port those. Mm-hmm. But the Erlang won't hold me back in that regard.
Right. And then actually for Fabric, didn't you also use another tool to kind of help you structure the languages?
Oh, yeah, Antler. I think Antler is an acronym for something, but I don't remember what. But it's a what is it called? Parser generator, and it's essentially a tool where you write the language grammar out in this specific style, and then it will take that language grammar and create the C++ code to compile scripts or whatever. But it's a much more general purpose tool. It's not just for building programming languages. It's for anything that you want to be able to parse out any sort of file or data. And it's been just an absolutely fabulous tool to help me build Fabric.
Do you wish you had something like that when you rewrote the formula language engine?
Well, with the formula engine, I already had a compiler, and I didn't have to write one. And that was actually the compiler that was taken from Lotus 1.2.3 way, way back. Ray didn't even write that one. He stole that one from Lotus years ago. That was some very scary code in Notes. That was everybody complained about compute because if you wanted to add something, you had to mess around there, but the compiler code was just much worse. Much worse.
You've also got to think that back then they were worried about weird memory spaces and, 16-bit things.
Definitely. And a lot of the coding conventions, too, when you're looking at 25-year-old code, that old code just has different idioms.
Wow, 25
different,
years
conventions.
Old. Compute is probably that old.
Yeah. Right, like, what do you do if
Damon,
the...
Damon, were you born?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I was born, but I was just a little kid.
Born back then. We know you were born, but...
Yeah. All right, so it sounds like you've got the database engine kind of up and running, and then you got Fabric kind of over here on the side that's going to be talking to it. How far along are you on Fabric? Is the language working, and you just need to plug it in?
Yeah, the core engine is all running. I have a pretty comprehensive, I have a pretty decent test suite right now for the language. So it, and that's all the language does. I don't have it hooked up to anything else. But what it does is the test suite reads a bunch of formulas out of a file, compiles them, runs them, and then compares the result with what they're supposed to be. So I have all the math stuff working, all the branching constructs, function calls. I can't even remember all the stuff I got working, but the engine is basically ready to go. It's ready to be dropped in, and then once it's dropped in, then I start writing queries. I'll add new functions to it and that sort of stuff. So it'll continue to expand as it goes, but the core of it is done.
All right. For the listening audience, what's the best way to start learning about Couch and how people out there can start helping and learning about Couch and becoming
Well, there's the Couch Wiki, which I have a link to it off my site. I think it's couchdb.infogaming.com.
Yeah, we haven't. I put that in the show notes already. So,
okay. So right now, and it's I don't have nearly as much stuff on it as I want to have, but it's got some stuff there, and it's got a lot of stuff about Fabric actually. That's the first place. And if you have questions about anything about Couch, add it to the FAQ in the wiki. And I'll try to get it answered. Or if you don't feel comfortable doing that, just email them to me, because I would like to know what it is that people want to know about it at this point. So if you think that you're bugging me by asking the questions, you're not. You're actually doing me a favor. So anybody who wants to know, ask me questions.
Now, how far out do you think you are in terms of actually releasing something that that's going to be touchable? Because you've got it working kind of internally now, right?
I'm hoping alpha within a month or two. I'm trying to figure out exactly what I want in it. So the very minimum that I could do to release it as a beta is without Fabric and without any real collation support, but with the REST API. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be able to write any actual queries. It would just be simple item value mappings for the computed tables. But I think I want to go ahead and get Fabric hooked up, and then I also got to get the collation stuff, which is a nightmare. I have to figure out how to get sort all this data in all these strings and all these languages and all these character sets and all that. And I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to do about that, how I'm going to plug all that stuff in.
Well, after 25,000 people listen to this podcast, I'm sure, some venture capitalist is going to, be giving you a call, sending you an email and say, hey, Damien, I got 35 programmers over here waiting to help you build Couch. And when that happens, Damien, don't forget about, little Bruce and Julian. So.
I won't forget about you guys.
But didn't on April 1st though? Didn't you have some type of engagement with Google or something?
Oh yeah. That was the big Google hoax.
Believe it or not, I did fall for it. So.
Everybody fell for it at first, which was the point. And then I was releasing progressively absurd information as the day went on, and more and more people started to catch on, but
it
wasn't obvious. And I got to tell you, I feel kind of bad. If I had to do it over again, I would do it differently. But it's an experiment.
You have another year, a little less than a year. You can think of something. So
yeah, well, I'm always I had that particular hoax, that particular joke planned months in advance. I had been thinking about that. And then, I had been thinking about it and hadn't done anything about it until, the night before. Mm-hmm. And then I quickly dashed off that thing. So maybe next year I'll actually put more effort into it.
Mr. Robicho, any further questions for Mr. Katz at this point, or any parting words either?
Parting words. Sounds like parting shots. No, I think maybe what we probably need to do is go ahead and start taking some comments about the podcast and maybe plan a part two based on kind of what people want to hear, what the questions that people have and the things that people want to know, and And because I know there's a lot more detail. I mean, you know, Damien, I'm sure from a technical standpoint, you could probably go on for a while about how all this stuff works. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, you know, I mean, that's the thing is, I would have everybody's eyes glazed over in a second if you let me.
Wake up,
so
people.
It's really hard to know what people are going to find interesting about it.
Yeah, so I think we should just take questions on the blog and see and just plan on doing a part two, just sort of based on what people want to hear.
And even answer them right there on the comments section, Damien. So like Adam Gartenberg did on the Same Time 7-5 podcast. So
absolutely.
All right. Well, that's a wrap for episode 23 of the Taking Notes podcast. And Julian?
Yeah, Bruce?
That's it. Damien, thanks again for taking some time out to be with us on the Taking Notes podcast.
So, oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Yeah, and we'll talk to you again real soon, you hear?
Take care.
Okay.
So long.
All right.
Bye-bye.